chat here. Oh, very good. Let's see. There we go. Did everyone open up the chat and scroll to the top? And this is from the Dhammapada, and it's on vigilance. Did it come in? It
No,
hasn't come in.
it's not here.
Okay, just a minute. Let's see why it hasn't. Oh, it doesn't seem to want to go. Recording on. I'm going to try and send again another one. Nope, it says that it's maybe it says it's too big. Well, this is this I'll read it for you because it's very good and it fits in with the theme of the month in your studies on self-study and meditation from the Dhammapada, the idea of vigilance. And I think the reason why it didn't want to go through is because it is too many words. So I'll try and send a smaller version. So you can, no, it's not going to work. Okay. So I'll read to you from chapter 2 on vigilance from the Dhammapada. So the second chapter is also called Appamattha, or vigilance. It is translated as carefulness, mindfulness, heedfulness, watchfulness, wakefulness, thoughtfulness, reflection, diligence, earnestness, and zeal. We need to cultivate awareness or mindfulness at four levels. There must be awareness of things, awareness of self, awareness of people, and awareness of reality. Regarding awareness of things, a Buddhist teacher narrates the story of an apprentice painter who wanted to paint bamboos. He was asked by his master to first learn to see the bamboos. So he looked at the bamboos in all their details and under various conditions of rain and mist, in sunlight and moonlight, in different seasons, till he became one with the bamboos. And only then was he asked to paint bamboos. We also need to be aware of our thoughts and feelings. Most of the time, we're unaware of what we're thinking about. Thoughts and feelings drift through our mind. How then can we control the entry of unwholesome thoughts and desires? Mr. Crosby points out that people often look at their watch and put it back in the pocket. Next instant, if someone asks what time it is, they have to look again, being unable to tell. That is because the first time they looked at the watch, it was to see what time it was not. It is the careless habit of letting things impress us without definite notation. HPB also emphasizes the need to be aware of the contents of our mind. She points out that purely bodily actions and functions are far less important than what a man thinks and feels. What desires he encourages in his mind and allows to take root and grow. If we are vigilant, there is no scope for the unwholesome thought and desires to enter and take root. So that gives us a different slant from last week on this idea, the importance of being aware. You know, and we found it very helpful to consider awareness in four ways: awareness of things, awareness of self, awareness of people, and awareness of reality. So, in that regard, what do we consider reality? It's a question. What do we think? We understand being aware of the people around us, being aware of the self, and as was pointed out, at being vigilant of the mind and the desires that were growing. And then the awareness of people and things. What is the awareness of reality? TK.
Well, that it's actually a kind of a tough question, but perhaps a useful analogy of trying to see reality is when we find ourselves more deeply reading within the words or reading behind the sentences. So maybe in our conversations with people, if we maybe that would equate to getting past the emotion, the inflection of tone, the words, and try to see what this person really needs and how I can help them.
That is very important. In other words, what we're doing is we're seeing people not as personalities, but as spiritual pilgrims in that regard. And that in itself is the reality that they might be speaking of. SL?
Is there a difference between the reality of things, the reality of people, and the reality of self? Are we talking about three different realities, or is it all one and the same?
Oof. Another difficult question. What do we think? Can we see the underlying reality behind the effects that we see of separateness? That's what would that feeling of reality be? That understanding of reality. It's a good question. And the one thought that comes to mind, first of all, is that everything that we're witnessing on this plane of effects that we live in is a result of a process that all of life is going through from within, without. So it would seem that, and this is where the secret doctrine comes in very handy, because it helps us to understand this process of becoming, which is the reality. And the declaration points that out too, that we don't get caught up in the temporary opinions of things. We're looking for that reality. SL?
Well, since we're very often looking at the effects, the observable effects of things, of people and ourselves, we were wondering if when we talk about the real, we're looking at the causes, the
Yes.
underlying causes, whether we're looking at the underlying cause of a thing, a phenomena, the underlying motivation or source of a person or of ourselves. We're looking into the world of causes, or continuing to ask ourselves, is this a cause or is this an effect of something else?
That's right. That's an awareness that we need to cultivate. TK.
Well, so far as is the reality of self, of people, and of all the different things, is it the same one reality? And it's an impossible question to ask if we think about the things that we look at that are physical. It's impossible to answer that question. But if we just think of the ocean in that statement that all is spirit and soul ever evolving under their one rule of law. Now, that doesn't mean, now, even on that plane, get away from the physical and go into the some people will call it the energetic field, into the astral, whatever you want to call it. Are all things the same there? Well, probably not. They're not. There's different forces of behind it, but it might be easier for us to accept that everything participates in a common purpose. So if we can get to that place, then maybe we can find ourselves headed toward understanding what the reality is if we see the purpose for everything, or accept that there is a purpose and search for that purpose.
Thank you. What you shared brings to mind what HBB mentions in the near the end of The Key to Theosophy. Very compelling to think about is that there are four links in a golden chain. And she said they're unity, human solidarity, and karma and reincarnation. And to contemplate those four things together, one comes to realize that what it means to be in this process as a humanity. So we're less likely to get caught up in the effects when we begin to see unity, human solidarity. We're all going through this together. And the process is through that reincarnation and karmic cycle that we're all involved in. So we stop thinking in terms of like and dislike, want and don't want, desire. And we start to look from behind the scenes at what is taking place. What is this process of becoming? And we'll notice right away that there are cycles, rises and falls in that cyclic motion. And the rises and the fall is just as important as the rise, and the rise requires a fall. And that's part of that human solidarity too. And we can take great strength and heart in that when we see things in a downward cycle, and realize that this is part of the solidarity, this is part of the unity, this is part of the process, and is necessary for the eventual rise again to a spiral much higher. So thank you very much for the comments. We'll get into the article. How Aware Are We, Part Two. Do we have a volunteer to read?
Charlie.
Thank you, TK. So let's go from our searchlight. So it'll be one, two, three, all the way down to all sacred scriptures, or five paragraphs, I believe, depending on your copy.
Okay, thank you. Our searchlight of awareness must be directed towards two main targets: the outward objects and the inner stages. On the outward planes, we may study people and notice things we encounter. An interesting awareness technique in a Buddhist school is to sit down and watch one's in-breathing and out-breathing, including the pause in between. Here, a certain concentration is required to maintain breath awareness for some specific time. As to the awareness of people, there is such a thing as noticing body language. A person's posture and facial mien sometimes reveal his inner state and character. In the Japanese culture, people cultivate a faculty of noticing some form of beauty, a signature, or a meaning in natural objects like stones and flints, in a piece of wood, the shape and structure of a leaf, etc. But awareness of our inner states is much more useful. For instance, we could discover our own inner cause of partial failures and weakened resolves. A true seeker of wisdom may resolve to pursue the higher life of the soul, but the lower personal nature comes to the surface to claim attention and make demands. His safety lies in keeping his consciousness in touch with the reality of the inner life and to remember his resolve. For any slackness in the remembrance of the higher purposes of existence can weaken his will and confuse his judgment during the tests and trials that come to every seeker. Lord Buddha's teaching on vigilance say Lord Buddha's teachings on vigilance say that wakefulness is not merely being on one's guard against the lower ebullitions, but having resolved to undertake yoga sadhana. This discipline demands sincerity and persistence in the same. A constantly vigilant person experiences the inner joy of freedom from the non-essentials, freedom from the non-essentials, and from the attachment to the personal nature. The Buddha says that the one who has recognized the danger of heedlessness advances like a fire, consuming fetters, small or large. The higher evolution of man takes place in and through awareness. It follows, therefore, that the progress or higher evolution is at the same time a progress of awareness. It also means that there is the development of an awakened consciousness in depth and also in all embracing breadth. If we survey the process of evolution, we find that the present state of self-awareness in man has been graduated from that of lower forms of life in nature. Along with the physical evolution, the consciousness in creatures also progressed from the most rudimentary in the mineral to that of the vegetable, animal, and higher up in the human kingdom. Man alone is endowed with the faculty of apperception, the ability, which is the ability of observing the state and phenomena of his own consciousness. And now, man, the self-conscious thinker is further evolving towards the higher form of awareness in order to reach what is called perfect awareness, Samyak Smriti, the highest goal for the present race. In the Oriental psychology, a distinction is made between the personal self-awareness with changes with the self-image and conditions and the unchanging sense of I am I, which remains from birth through all. In the Oriental psychology, a distinction is made between the personal self-awareness, which changes with the self-image and conditions, and the unchanging I am I, which remains from birth through all the changes of the personality, personal identity, till the death and beyond. Of self-consciousness is the privilege of the is the privilege of only the human beings. Since we are involved all the time in the personal affairs, we lose touch with the root of our being, the silent, permanent individuality or ego. Thus, the important lesson to be learnt from the practice of awareness is to note that the familiar self is habitually engaged in its personal doings and in the surface of mind, while the real ego remains behind as the witnessing consciousness, better recognized as the presence. One of the chief devotional exercises through meditation consists of discriminating between the two selves, the real and the unreal, the permanent and the transitory, and acting on the basis of the real man in us, our secret friend, philosopher and guide. Ancients call it avidya, or spiritual ignorance, if we do not see the wisdom of distinguishing between these two tendencies in us. It is the awareness practice which helps us to see the roles of the dual consciousness in our life's purpose. This becomes the beginning of true knowledge or wisdom spoken of in all sacred scriptures.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we can see here a very good explanation of what is said in the beginning of the Voice of the Silence about being able to discern the real from the unreal and to be aware of the dangers of the lower iti or the personality. It gives a very good description in here in this survey of Buddhism. by Bhikshu. That last passage read was from Bhikshu Sangha Harshita, and his copy of his understanding of the Bhagavad Gita has just been published in India and sent out for anyone that's interested. So, what are some of the comments or points that we'd like to pull out from this? SL?
The last sentence in the second paragraph. For
Okay.
any slackness in the remembrance of the higher purposes of existence can weaken his will. So we've often heard the expression that behind will stands desire. In other words, it is really the generation of our desire that awakens the will, the higher desire, or even our lower desires awaken will. So, this remembrance of the higher purpose of existence seems to suggest that for most of us, we're more likely to remember and be aware of our lower desires. And it takes effort to recall and remember and to be aware of a higher desire in order to generate that will. So we think that's an important application of self-awareness, that in all situations, our natural impulse as human beings in this state is to act according to the desires of the personality, but we have to make the effort to bring ourselves to awareness of our higher aspirations in order to make progress.
That's right. And in that work and that effort, we shouldn't be discouraged. It is going to be difficult. And Mr. Judge says that in this struggle that has just been pointed out, there is great benefit in the overall process of our evolution. For when we move in from the Kali Yuga age into the Tritya age, that it's going to be easier for us, but where we land in the ages to come depends on the efforts that we make now during this Kali Yuga age. And so every effort that we make to manage this process is going to have tenfold results on the spiritual planes. So again, we don't need to be discouraged or get caught up in effects, as was mentioned earlier, but to keep on trying is because all the books that the devotional books indicate that the importance is in the trying, not necessarily in the success, but into the keep on trying to do this work. So one has to then ask, when we continue to struggle with the personality, where is the strength developing as we struggle to overcome the personality? That'd be one question we could consider, but let's go to TK first.
Well, good. Okay, so to answer this question, could we hear it again? You know, it had to do with the will. What was it? It was,
Was it my question or was it
yeah. What you just said, the question you asked was how, what was
right.
it about the will, personality, what?
Our struggle to overcome
Oh,
the
right.
senses of the personality and the observation, the adjustment, what is being exercised in that process?
Right. So, as the teachings say, it's, we all have infinite will. It's there. People think, oh, I have no willpower. That's mistake number one. You have there, it's infinite. We have to develop the muscles and the facility in our nature to use and direct will. So there is. It's, I guess it's not a physical thing unless you're working out with weights and then you'll use your physical will. I don't know. But there's something metaphysical about it, about the use of will that helps us to overcome distractions from the past. And that might have something to do with minimizing the monkey mind, self-control, control of the emotions, control of our desires. It's isn't it said that, the few it's kind of oversimplifying, but it is what it is. The fewer desires we have, the less diffused our use of will is. So, something really through meditation, we can learn how to see the futility of a lot of things that we used to think were important. So just like retire from those things. All right, I'm done with that. That's over. I'm done. I'm done. And just kind of let go of things and rearrange the deck. Focus on the fewer, more important things. And perhaps that's step one in a more effective use of will.
Yes. Yeah. Reduce our desires to the single desire. And that helps. Theosophy Hall, you had your hand up.
We just wanted to make a comment about there was that portion in the beginning, the reading, that talked about if we are able to manage the real from the unreal and that sort of thing. That it gives us a sort of freedom. And we that really struck us because, freedom of, when I'm trying to phrase it, when we are focusing in the higher and we have less distractions. Then we are freer because it's the distractions that like imprison us. So
Yes.
we can definitely see that that is such a real idea about it.
Thank you. And we can apply that directly to what is happening in the world today, currently. If we can see the long view, if we can see into the distance, we can understand that everything that we're going through now as a humanity is a process. And that gives us a freedom. Freedom to study, a freedom to apply the ideas of theosophy in our daily life, because we're not going to get caught up in the effects. It doesn't mean we ignore the effects, but we're not going to get caught up in them and swayed by them, because we're going to hold the long view that this is a process of evolution that's taking place. And we're actually the freedom also comes from we no longer feel too discouraged by it. We see it as that there's a crack in the shell and something good is going to come out of this, because we have faith in that evolutionary process and into this in the spiritual side of our humanity. So SL and then JB.
One of the things it seems we need to work on in our awareness relates to our character. Too often we are more aware of the character of our personality and the personalities of others, our flaws, insufficiencies, faults, that sort of thing. But we wonder the way in which we respond to circumstances, especially unpleasant ones, whether they come to us through people or situations in life, the way in which we respond, doesn't that make us more aware of our true character as opposed to our personal nature? We may see ourselves as very flawed or making mistakes in certain areas. But we also know that we're very consistent in the way we'll respond in adversity. And very often, people in adverse crisis situations respond in ways they would never have expected.
Thank you. You bring up something very important there in this idea of, okay, what is it we're doing in Kali Yuga? And maybe we can consider we're building that character through this process of gaining reincarnation and karma. We're building our a character. And you know, when you see a character like Jane Goodall or Gandhi, or Martin Luther King, that character didn't just come out of thin air. That is a result of that process of reincarnation and karma, the building of it. And Mr. Crosby mentions, and Mr. Judge, I believe, where we says that we develop a character that becomes constitutionally incapable of a selfish act. And that's the work that we have before us as a humanity during this Kali Yuga. So, as was mentioned about our responses, how do we respond? We need to be aware of how we respond to the effects around us and ask us, is our response taking us in the direction we want to go? Is it creating the future that we're trying to make? And if the answer is no, then we have to change our response to reflect the direction that we want to go in. And JB?
Yes. So one point I found really interesting in the article, paragraph 4 and 5, it says that man alone is endowed with the faculty of appreciation, the ability of observing the state and phenomenon of his own consciousness. And then it also goes on to say that self-consciousness is the privilege of only the human beings. In theosophy, isn't there other entities, think beings that aren't incarnate that are able to think or have self-consciousness, the evolution and the beings of planets and other beings, are they able to think? Is there self-consciousness among us, or is it really only man that has this ability?
Well, that's a very good question because I think the answer is both yes and no. That there are only three kinds of intelligences. There are those who have not become human, those who are human, and those who have gone beyond the state of humanity. And there would seem that there comes a point in time when with the great divine architects of the cosmos, that they've even let go of their individuality. They become a force, a sort of beyond, become all conscious rather than self-conscious. And whether that means, what that means, we have no idea what that means to be all conscious. It is so far beyond us. But they are working to sustain the cosmos that we are living and moving and having our evolution in. Now, whether they come back to a self-conscious form or they maintain that in the future, we don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't think HPB gives an answer to that question. But we'll go to TK and then Theosophy Hall. Let's further explore this.
Right. So it's certainly hard to explain with words what all consciousness is, but maybe that's why she gave us a symbol for it. Perhaps all consciousness is represented by the point in the circle where the point is everywhere and the circumference is nowhere.
So would that seem then that at some point in time we have to let go of even self-consciousness? It would seem.
Well, we've won, as we've read through the teachings, we've never asked this question, but we think this might be the case. And that question is, right, you're not a human being yet, or you're a human being, or you were a human being. Okay. Our understanding is the higher beings. They're not referred to as human beings, but they are referred to as man. indicating they have mind. So maybe that's the distinction. Once you hit a human being is man, we have self-conscious, individualized mind. So do the higher, until perhaps what you're talking about is complete emergence into Buddhi, leaving mind behind, I guess, or absorbing in the fullness. Yeah. Okay. So, so our thoughts there is right. Once you get past the human stage, it corrects us if we're wrong. We think you're still a man, but you're not a human being.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It makes sense. Let's go
At
with
least, or at
theosophy.
least, okay, or at least that's the word that's used. Okay,
Yes.
sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we have the there are beings of varying degrees that not all the Mahatmas and all the adepts are the same. Not all adepts are Mahatmas, and so, again, we see varying degrees of awareness that continues even on the higher planes and the higher beings. There are different degrees of awareness. So Theosophy Hall and then SL.
Well, the beings below man, they work on impulse, intuition, but they don't have apperception. And the beings beyond man are one with the law. They're really deity. The law and deity are the same. And they, in a sense, they don't have free will because it's not necessary. They've already exercised their free will. They've made all the mistakes and corrected them and balanced out their karma. So they're one with the law. So they're always acting in accordance with the law. They're always acting for what is best.
Well, that's very interesting to contemplate. What does it mean to be one with the law? That's very good. Thank you. SL?
Well, it is said that at a certain point in the evolution of human being, the human animal form was lit up with self-conscious awareness or mind by those who had acquired it in previous periods of evolution. And it describes it in a certain way as which self-conscious beings from a higher state descended or a portion of them incarnated. Well, how can a being give to another being what it does not already have itself? So they must have self-consciousness awareness, but the way in which they use it, direct it, would vary. And that is where we are in our evolution. We all have individual self-consciousness, but where are we directing it? What are we, how are we becoming more aware, with that capacity?
Thank you. It also brings to mind that a responsibility that we have, that we're all links in a chain of this human solidarity. And there's always going to be those less aware than us and those that are more aware. And we form an important link in that chain. And as the theosophical teachings show us, that we have to be able to bring our awareness out on all three planes of human life, the waking, the dreaming, and the dreamless, that we have, especially to our younger brothers or those who are less aware than ourselves, we have a responsibility to share our awareness with them, with compassion, with love, with tolerance. And we have to be patient in that regard, just as the great teachers are patient with us, and when we see our fellow humanity that are not aware, we can ask ourselves, how aware are we in regards to the great teachers, and hold a higher position and then share that awareness. That's our responsibility to our humanity in that solidarity. Well, let's see how far much further we can read here, where we should skip to. Miss went too far. Oh, I think we can go right to the end of the article. It's just two more paragraphs. Some reason or other, I thought it was another page. I'll just quickly read it here. In the Buddhist tradition, this technique is called to become aware of awareness. And at its perfection, it is called Samyak Samriti, perfect remembrance of one's spiritual base. And we could consider that what might have something to do with that dot in the circle. According to the Oriental psychology, there are three are the planes of consciousness that can be scaled to reach the highest. Patanjali explains that mind, or th the thinking principle, is subject to constant modifications by reason of it being diffused over a multiplicity of subjects. Well, we talked about that for sure. Mind is modified by every subject or object that comes before it. It is, as it were, transformed into that subject or object. When one does not practice concentration, the soul, which uses the mind as an instrument and views the object through the mind, is, as it were, altered into that form. However, at the time of perfect concentration, the soul abides in the state of a spectator without a spectacle. The soul is brought into a state of being wholly devoid of taint or impression by any object or subject. Let's see. I think I lost the last page of this article. Does anyone have the last page for this? TK, please finish it.
I was just saying, it's we pick up with the true seeker. There it is, the true seeker to silence in his mind by means of awareness technique. And the true seeker seeks to silence his mind by means of awareness technique and through intense devotion. Awareness technique, intense. To be alive is to be aware, and vice versa. So what does it mean to take awareness as a discipline? When cultivated by constant practice, it can put us in the silent stance of being a deliberate and detached observer of self from time to time while carrying on outer activities. For instance, one has to become aware of the mental and emotional tendencies and his familiar mental grooves so as to be able to control and direct them in the right channel, into the right channel. This can also be an aid in the exercise of self-examination, during which one recalls the impressions recorded of the day's noteworthy events and evaluates them. Ultimately, this discipline helps to make the needed internal adjustments and corrections, like a navigator's compass in the travel through life's journey. Mind is considered to be a mirror, which gathers dust while it reflects, the dust of false ideas, biases, desires, and predilections. One has to be aware of their existence to get rid of them. Watching the mental processes would also help one to curb the tendency to go off at a tangent. For instance, mention of HPB might remind us of Russia and then of the airplane journey to another country, and we might start thinking of a totally irrelevant matter in no time. If we are watchful, we see that we're going off track. It's very essential to know if we have an inquiring and reflecting mind. It is important to ask questions, but it is equally important that we find the answers ourselves. At an advanced stage, a chela is expected to be fully aware of his inner and outer states of consciousness. Also, he should be able to register every noteworthy event in his hourly condition. He must be capable of recalling correctly every impression recorded upon his astral being for the purpose of daily self-examination. Mr. Judge points out that the mere passing sight of a picture or a spoken word may become a basis for one's dream. The dreamer must be able to trace back his dream to the cause by carefully going backwards day by day through all events and through all the thoughts he permitted to pass through his brain. For a discerning seeker, his self-awareness can reveal the tone or character and the tenor, the general drift or the course followed, of his life and consciousness, which may need to be regulated according to his spiritual needs. When this discipline engages the power of will, it will help to develop the power of concentration necessary for the penetrating thought and an explorer of for the penetrating thought as an explorer of truth and wisdom. This has to be supported by the deep interest in the study in hand and preferably great devotion.
Thank you.
There was a little more. We're still
one more. Okay. Yeah.
Two sentences, I think.
Okay.
For instance, a true scientist may get deeply involved in his thesis, or an artist with his creative imagination and expression, or a seeker lost in the study of Adhyatma. Such committed people soon sharpen their power of awareness and their perspective faculty so that the higher nature within may do the rest by supplying the flash of insight or an inspiration in their own field of research and creativity if the motive is particularly selfish. Interesting.
I thought it says selfless.
Selfless?
Less.
Yes.
Selfless.
That's what I've been doing wrong.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. I finally found the page. I don't know why we lost it, but thank you very much. So we see the great work that we have before us, and that it's going to take, you know, many incarnations to achieve this. SL.
So in a few places in this reading, the expression of something being noteworthy was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
What makes an experience in our life noteworthy? How do we know it's noteworthy as opposed to being casual, not worth the ball or attention, and so forth?
Oh, that's a good question. How do we know if something is noteworthy? What happens? What happens? The other thing that comes to mind in that, if we're not paying attention or not aware, we might bypass something that should have been noteworthy. There's another problem. You know, we can look back and we go, oh, that was an important thing that was happening there. I wasn't paying attention. So, but then there are some things that stand out very, very much so as noteworthy. And one of the things that comes to mind in that is character. Is something that's noteworthy is maybe something that changes our character, that brings us to make an adjustment. You know, and it seems too that we remember that throughout our lives. We don't forget. It's always there. TK and then SL.
Right. It was just said that that helps us to make an adjustment. At the same time, we were thinking, you know, something that might be noteworthy would be the unexpected answer to a question, or the unexpected piece to a puzzle that we've always had in the back of our mind, and there it is. So that may be worthy of examination of why now? Why do I get it now?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Very good. You know, because sometimes when we ask a question, especially before we go to sleep and on self-examination, as your talk, you know, we ask a question and all of a sudden, maybe a month or 2 months or a year later, we get an answer to that question. And so, you know, it's important to note those. Those are noteworthy moments. For sure. SL?
Sort of along that line, it seems that something can be noteworthy from our personal nature and our individual nature, individuality. So yes, a problem we're going through, a stumbling situation, a karmic bump could certainly be noteworthy for us to examine. But what is also important is to note the voice in the silence influence of our higher nature, to be more aware of our own whispering aspirations, the help that seems to come from within in the karmic circumstances of our life where we are helped in ways we didn't expect it, to be aware of that influence as well,
Yes.
to take note of that. So both are necessary.
Yeah, to be aware of that higher intention and to, be constantly asking ourselves, is what I'm thinking, this thought, taking me in the direction I want to go? And maybe, reflecting the higher onto that lower thought, to purify it, to lift it up. Rather than being giving into it, so to speak. And we see that in our humanity, even those, especially in those who are struggling to overcome some character flaw, that the first thing that they all say they had to do was put some distance between themselves and that character flaw and realize that they were not the flaw, but they were the manager of it. So that is helpful too. But our time is almost past. Is there any other thoughts on this today? If I pull up my paper, I won't be able to see your lovely faces. So if there's any writings in there that any other quotes that we should pull out of that? Any other thoughts? It was a good article to consider at the beginning of this year. As we pointed out in the first meeting, that maybe what our resolution was should be is to be more aware, rather than giving up a certain habit or developing a new one, it's just maybe have cultivating awareness. And as it pointed out in the Dhammapada notes there, to be aware of things, aware of self, aware of people, and aware of reality. That we have to do all four. And that's our job. So thank you, everyone. It was a wonderful meeting, and I look forward to next week.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you.